The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
We've hit the bye rounds, but that doesn't mean the footy quality stops there. This weekend we've got two games with two of the top five sides taking on each other. Also, we have a look at a smoky and our first pick player if we had a mid-year All-Australian side. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth and we're here for the Thursday Match Committee ahead of Round 13 and the regular Thursday team has assembled in the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Firstly, let's welcome the rising star of the Fox Sports News AFL team and very much approaching the West Coast number one ticket holder, Rice, Drew Jones. Hello, Deej.
Good morning. Hello. Good to see both of you. Thanks for the introduction.
Great to have you back on board. I'm looking forward to some of the stuff that you've bring to the podcast, and you've been bringing some very good stuff recently. I mean, we'll get to that when West Coast take on Brisbane, and we'll preview that game. And also, a man bringing plenty to the podcast is, of course, the first 11 coach there for the Melbourne Grammar Cricket side, an aspiring Melbourne number one ticket holder and very nicely dressed, probably best dressed in the podcast bunker today. Hello, Tommy Morris.
Thank you, Benny. Thanks, Drew. Thanks for having me. You did look at my Gantt jumper then, Drew, but you haven't even given any attention to Ben Waterworth's Tommy Hilfiger number.
Yeah, there's a couple of sweat numbers going on in the bunker. Not something I generally associate myself
oh,
with.
Oh, no, that is ridiculous, no. Ben. If you see the way he dresses every day, then you'll disagree with that.
You'd probably be nice to know, Tommy, this is a Tommy Hilfiger jumper and Tommy Hilfiger pants as well. So,
dresses in style.
Sponsored today. Let's look at the first big game. We mentioned beforehand that there's two games where the top five are taking on each other, well, four of the top five teams. And it's going to be a fascinating contest on Saturday night when Geelong takes on the Western Bulldogs, second taking on fourth. Before we sort of have a good look at that game, Drew, I'm sure you would have seen the incredible numbers that Paddy Dangerfield racked up on Saturday night against North Melbourne and Geelong's really convincing win there. What have you noticed sort of about Patrick Dangerfield since he's been able to get to the club? He's one of our favourites here at Fox Footy, not just because of the bloke he is, but in terms of what he brings on the field is quite unbelievable, and he's had an excellent effect on that Geelong side so far this year.
Yeah, I was at the game on Saturday night, so I got a pretty good view of it. And I've watched him live a few times this year, Geelong, and they're great to watch. And Paddy in particular, I saw him against Hawthorn, against West Coast, and then on the weekend. That ability to burst away from the contest, and it's Chris Judd-like. I think it's the only person really who's been able to emulate getting away from a contest, bursting free, like putting 10, 15 metres on a pack. When he's surrounded by players, so strong. He gets so much outside ball now, which I feel like maybe he wasn't doing at Adelaide. He's probably slowly added things to his game throughout his entire career. He had the tools when he started. I mean, that's a sign of a great player, isn't it? Someone that's constantly adding new elements to their game. And yeah, he's taken it all to another level this season at Geelong.
Every year we see a midfielder take it to a new level, don't we? A couple of years ago, it was Ablett. And I know he's been amazing for a few seasons. But Gary Ablett 2 seasons ago was next level. He was being spoken about as one of the best players of all time, if not the best. Nat Fyfe last season hit that mark. Obviously, injuries have crawled in this season. Dangerfield seems to be the player of 2016 in terms of a midfielder who's just doing as he pleases. And he showed that on the weekend, 48 disposals. But it was his game. Everywhere you looked, he was around. He was taking marks. He was tackling. He did everything possible for his team to win. And it's no surprise they got up.
Just a random one for both of you. Now, I'm just trying to think back at who's been the most complete midfielder of the last decade, who's been able to get that grunt ball inside, go forward, kick goals, get ball on the outside as well. I mean, apart from Ablett, is there anyone that's been able to do everything?
During his time at West Coast, Chris Judd was the complete player. I think, and there was signs during his Carlton days, particularly during his Brownlow medal year, that explosion was there. And Danger, it's a different kind of explosion between Judd and Dangerfield. I think Judd probably took smaller steps sort of out of explosion. Dangerfield's probably got the bigger strides, but they're still just as damaging from clearances. But I think Dangerfield now it's got to that stage, and particularly if he wins a major award at the end of the season, possibly the Brownlow, it might start to be a group of three. But when we look back at the best midfielders maybe since 2005, since the end of Voss, Buckley, Hurd, maybe that Dangerfield, Ablett, and Judd maybe are not coupled together, but the three of them are put together. As you mentioned, Drew, his uncontested numbers have gone through the roof this year. 15.5 he's averaging at the moment, which is a career high. He's also impacting the scoreboard, so his score assists and score involvements are at a career high. And he's made his game. Well, I think 1,000 on the weekend probably boosted that number up, but 600 overall that he's averaging this year, and a career high 133 ranking points. He's got 19 votes in the Fox Footy Player of the Year so far, and there's a fair few best on ground. difference in that. Do you think he might be leading the Brownlow at this stage of the season, Tommy?
I think he probably is. If he's not leading, it'll be very close. I think he's we've spoken about a quality player, just on the metres gained as well. So he's gained over a kilometre for the match. Let's put this into perspective. The ground is less than 200 metres long. So he's gained over 5 grounds in his disposal and the way he runs for the entire match. It's quite remarkable.
Well, what about you, Drew? How do you see Danger in terms of how he might be? It's hard to read, you know, Brownlow medal votes, but we know that Danger polls well in previous years. Do you think he'd be right up there in the Brownlow contention at the moment? If not, who might be matching him?
Look, not something that I've thought about specifically, but I think he plays the kind of game that's conducive to getting Brownlow votes. And for that reason alone, I'd say he'd certainly be up there. You know, Hanbury's having a good year, guys like that in the midfield. But I think Danger's probably odds on to be leading.
Well, who's going to take the votes off him? Joel Selwood's had a reasonable year without being unbelievable and a good game on the weekend. But there seems to be no, unlike Judd and Daniel Kerr and Ben Cousins and before that, Lappin, Voss, Akamanis, there seems to be no one really that's on his level at Geelong that are going to take 3 votes off him on a consistent basis.
There's only once where I've seen Selwood probably have a better game than Dangerfield. That was against GWS a couple of weeks ago when he wheeled his team over the line that final term. But besides that, Danger's probably been better in games where he's performed than Selwood, I think.
Guthrie probably gets the 3 on that Friday night against Adelaide. Yep. But other than that, Danger's probably going to get the 3 more often than not.
He's been outstanding. Let's have a look at the actual game between the Cats take on the Dogs on Saturday night. And a good graphic during the week about the Cats and how they're playing so well against top 8 sides. They're 5-1 from their 6 games against the current top 8. The Dogs have had 5 games against top 8 sides this year and they are 2-3. They both play top 8 sides only 3 times for the remainder of the season after round 13, but the Cats have been able to show their ability that they can match it against the best. How do you see the contested ball game playing out, I think in particular DJ, which is something that we talk about every week with the Western Bulldogs, still plus 24 on their opposition. They average every week, clearly number 1 in the competition. But the Cats have shown in recent weeks against North and GWS plus 30 and plus 37 in contested ball that they have taken a huge step forward in this area of the ground this year in particular.
Yeah, and it is uncharacteristic of Geelong in recent years. I mean, that plus 24 stat for Dogs contested ball is amazing. They'll miss Dalhouse in that sense this weekend.
Probably leading their best and fairest almost, Dalhouse.
He's had a great year. Yeah, he's over the past 3 years, probably one of the most improved players in the league. I see this one probably breaking even. They're both just in-form contested ball sides. Dogs are just, like, we talk about it every week, like they've really dealt with their injuries really well. But, I mean, how many can you lose before it starts to affect the system and the way they play?
I think the interesting thing with the contested ball, I think it's a threefold skill or statistic. You've got to have ability in there. You've got to have the right mindset. So you've got to have the endeavour, and the Dogs definitely have that. But you've also got to have the right structures. And it appears that both teams have extremely good structures in there. They rarely lose 2 or 3 in a row, which tells me that they've got the right safeguards in check that if the other team wins it, they can then rectify the problem. And I think the Dogs and Geelong, they tick all those 3 boxes. So then it just comes down to who plays better on the day. It's as simple as that. Who's more on, who gets the rub of the green, what way the ball bounces, and then who can make the most of their opportunities.
Two different types of scoring that the teams have thrived in so far this year. The Cats are number 2 for scores from turnover differential, so they average 3 more goals than their opposition per game this year. The Dogs are 2nd, though, for scores from clearances, and that derives out of their contested ball work. They average 2 more goals than their opposition. Cam Mooney's written a really interesting league teams column this week talking about how Matthew Scarlett is still holding up the Geelong backline. So he's employed as a full-time defensive assistant coach this year. And Moons says he sees a lot of Matty Scarlett traits in the Geelong backline. So they're ruthless, they're excellent one-on-one, they're the best one-on-one defensive team in the competition at the moment. And they demand a lot of each other. And I think someone like a Lockie Henderson's come in and really suited that defensive structure quite well. What about Jack Redpath and the whole Tom Boyd situation, Drew? I know that you're quite big on the whole Tom Boyd situation and where he might sit in that Dogs lineup. He's had some problems with some injuries and a little bit of form issues. With Jack Redpath playing so well, kicked 4 goals last week, where does that leave Tom Boyd, do you think, going into the second half of the season? Because that mix of Redpath and Stringer down that forward 50 at the moment is working quite well.
Yeah, the balance is perfect, basically, at the moment for the Dogs. So I can't see Tom getting back in anytime soon. Redpath is... he's a late bloomer, I suppose you'd say, and he's making the most of his opportunities and making the most of his talent. And for now, I can't see them fitting Boyd back in. I think after the bye was always the plan with Boyd, and this makes it that much easier that they don't have to rush him back. I don't think he's been setting the world alight in the VFL. Baby steps at this point after the shoulder injury, I think.
It's an interesting one because Bulldogs are in the space of 18 months, they've got themselves at the pointy end, don't they? They could win a flag this year. And Luke Beveridge knows that. So he can't really afford to play Tom Boyd just for pure development reasons. He actually needs to play to win. So whether there's room for Boyd, Redpath, Stringer to win games of football remains to be seen. I think long-term there probably is. Stringer's flexible enough. He can play all over the place in the forward half. And Redpath's playing extremely good footy. But at the moment, it's just about where that balance lies. Are they playing to win or are they playing for 2017, 2018?
Is there, I think, a shift in the last 12 months away from the really tall, immobile forward? Redpath has shown an ability to put some defensive pressure on and in the forward 50, and that's good enough to keep him in the team.
You're sort of not used to Redpath. He's a young player that's sort of come on, and he's come from nowhere, really, and he just keeps bobbing up. You think, geez, how does he keep getting on the end of the ball? Well, it must be because he knows where to go, and he's got good, excellent game sense, and he finishes off really well.
I think Tom Hawkins is a really good example of your point, Drew, because when he stays close to goal, he goes back into that old... that old-fashioned type of forward in that he doesn't really move and he's not mobile up the ground. But when he switches on and he knows he's got to get up the ground, he's as damaging as they can be. He could be one of the best forwards in the comp when he's constantly playing like that. Let's move on to the big Friday night game this has turned into. North Melbourne taking on Hawthorn. First versus fifth, but there's just so many question marks about both teams heading into this game. So hopefully we might be able to find out a little bit more about both of these sides. I think the pressure is predominantly on North for this game, Drew, particularly out of the injuries. And I know you guys on the Fox Sports News team have been keeping a close eye on the Roos and how they might come up for this game. What's your hunch on out of that group of half a dozen almost that picked up injuries against Geelong on the weekend?
I think Del Santo probably plays, and I think if they probably will play Cunnington as well. Nahas, I don't know. I mean, he's got a fractured finger, so I'm not sure if you can play through that, maybe with a glove on. Swallow's an interesting one because it looked like a bad concussion. Like, I mean, it's hard for us to sit here and rate how bad a concussion is. We're not a doctor, and clearly the science behind it is still something that's being worked out. But it just looked bad, and players have rarely come back the week after concussions this season, and they've rarely played well when they've come back. Gaff and Steph Martin stick out as guys who have been knocked out and have struggled for form, so probably giving Swallow a week off wouldn't be the worst idea, but it's come at such a bad time because they've got a six-day break into Hawthorn, six-day break into Adelaide. Like, this is a really tough stretch for them to have injuries to key contested midfielders. I mean, it's a hard place on the ground to replace these guys. So I think Del Santo and Cunnington play. Attlee, I don't think so, and the other two are up in the air.
Probably the good thing from North Melbourne's perspective, though, is that they've got a little buffer on top of the ladder now. It's lessened in the last couple of weeks, and it might be gone completely after the next fortnight. But they are in a good position to finish top four, and that has to be the aim. It's always Hawthorn's aim to finish top four, first, second, third, fourth. It doesn't really matter unless the West Coast or an Adelaide get involved there, so have to move into state. But North, as long as they finish top four, I would imagine that, at least from an external perspective, we would think that's a positive for them and a win from where they were at the start of the season for a side that traditionally hasn't begun years well.
I think we talk about 3 weeks ago probably saying, oh, Jesus, North Melbourne will put themselves in a position where they can manage their team and they can afford to lose games in the second half of the year. Mm. Well, it doesn't matter who you lose those games to. Yeah. They've got the runs on the board from the first 9 weeks. They've got injuries, so you know, if they lose a couple of games now and their draw opens up later in the year and they can get them back, then that's fine.
Hawthorn are nowhere near their best as well. Either we can't forget that against Essendon, they won by 108 points, but they still lost the disposal count. They lost the clearance count. Their midfield is not what it was. It's not as strong. Luke Hodge is still not back. He probably back the game after, I think. So they're not playing amazing footy either. And there's every reason to suggest here that North Melbourne can come out breathing fire, back against the wall. They love that. And Hawthorn could just be caught on the hop a little bit. It'd be a very interesting game to watch.
Yesterday, we were talking about, Tommy, the last time these two teams met was a very fiery encounter at Etihad Stadium. We obviously had the Lewis and Hodge incidents with Lewis taking out Goldstein and Hodge, to a lesser extent, on Swallow. It was a fiery encounter. And North came under some criticism for being bullied around the contest.
In some ways, I rate North higher when people doubt them. So the fact they have injuries, in some ways it might help them. It might fire them up. Like, we've got our backs against the wall here. We've got Hawthorn a favourite despite the fact we're top of the ladder and 3 or 4 games ahead of them. It actually might make them better. And that's the intriguing thing about North Melbourne. Brad Scott just seems to get them up and get them going when it matters most and potentially when they deserve it least.
I couldn't see a physical attack coming from Hawthorn again like that. I don't think that they're not like that anymore. I don't reckon they've got that in their locker.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah,
And I don't think they can afford to have the suspensions either. Yeah. So I wouldn't expect them to come out physically and challenge North in the same way. Perhaps it's an opportunity for North to do it themselves.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how Daniel Wells goes. He hasn't played the Hawks since 2013, but he's in his five previous games against the Hawks before that, he averaged 110 ranking points. And we all know how good a form he has been in recent weeks. So it'll be a cracking contest on Friday night. We're just going to break in play for a moment in terms of looking straight at the games for the weekend, because throughout the week on foxfooty.com.au over the next couple of weeks, we'll be encouraging people out there to pick their mid-year All-Australian side. So you can do that by heading to foxfooty.com.au to pick your mid-year All-Australian team. And if you have to give us a reason why your team is better than everyone else's. And if your reason is the best, you win a tour at the Fox Footy Studios and a seat in the audience for Bounce and a signed Sharon. So a very, very nice prize, Fox Footy prize back that you might get. So I've asked you gentlemen to come prepared today with your first pick player so far for the All-Australian side and a roughie that maybe people might not have thought of so far. So Drew, who's your first pick and your roughie so far?
First pick has been discussed already on the pod, Patrick Dangerfield in the centres, having a career best year in seven categories, possibly will win the Brownlow medal. My smoky is Zach Merritt.
Yeah, I like that. I really like that, actually. A former first 11 cricket at Melbourne Grammar, might I add.
I think he's probably a shoo-in to be in the 40. Whether I can find a spot for him on the interchange, perhaps.
Plays his 50th game this weekend as well.
Yeah, he's having a cracking year. His attack on the ball is second to none. He gets a lot of kicks, handballs, but he gets contested ball. He tackles, kicks goals. He does it all, Zach Merritt. And works nicely into a plug that I'll be speaking to him today. And you'll see
Excellent.
That on Sunday before their game against the Giants they're playing.
Beautiful. You can catch that on AFL Today on Fox Sports News and on Fox Footy. So make sure you check that out. Tommy, you're roughie and first picked.
Well, I just want to say, how generous are we at Fox Footy? A tour of the studio, Bounce, and a Sharon. Is that foxfooty.com.au they've got to log on to do that?
They've got to go to foxfooty.com.au/AllOz, AOOZ, not AUS, OZ.
And there's a chance to meet the stars of the podcast.
Drew Jones and Ben Waterworth. That's a very generous. No, I'm... Look, my first pick player is Buddy. I've been harping on about him since about round two. I still think he's the best player in the AFL. And when I was looking through his stats last night, Ben, after you sent a very late text message telling us
to
come with this this view in check that Buddy is your first pick player, I was looking through his stats and he's second for inside 50s in the AFL and first for goals. Now, that's unbelievable. It just shows you how much he's working up the ground and then working back the ground to actually finish off. And he's an incredible player and he's in incredible form. So I'd pick him number one at centre forward.
A few years ago, I don't think Jason Dunster would have been first for goal and second for inside 50s.
And probably last for tackles as well, Chief. Hopefully he's not listening.
Good man, Chief.
Good man. And my roughie is Lee Montagna. Now, we often forget about the veterans and the more experienced players, but he's had an unbelievable season halfback for St Kilda. And he's floated around there last year, but he's really made that his own this year. He's sixth for kicks, second for uncontested disposals, which probably shows how little respect opposition teams are giving him. But him and Shane Savage on the other side are really working well together for St Kilda. And I really think he should be in the 40. He's been an All-Australian twice, I think it is, in 09 and 010. But don't discount him this year. That halfback flank is his own. He's played every game as well.
Speaking of halfback, well, in the backs, my first pick's Daniel Taulia, which is probably a little bit left of centre, but I think he's the best fullback in the moment. Number one intercept player at the Crows, which, for a fullback, I think is a really good effort. And he's had more one-on-one defensive contests than any other player in the AFL by 30 or 40, I think it is. And he's won or neutralised most of them, Tommy.
But is he a lock, Ben?
He's a lock for mine, yeah.
Nah, well, how could he be a lock?
Because he's the best fullback in the competition. For mine, the fullback is the most important place.
Oh, wow, whack. All right, continue. Sorry, Ben.
That's no play. No,
Dangerfield's winning the clearances and kicking it to Buddy. Don't worry about your fullback.
No. I'm all over Daniel Taulia this year. 16 disposals, career high. 7 marks, career high. 4 rebounds. I think for his ability to attack and defend this year has been second to none. So he goes straight in. My roughie's Dane Zorko. So like you, DJ, it's someone who has been playing in a team that's getting thumped most weeks, but he's an absolute standout and clearly would be winning Brisbane's best and fairest at the moment. The AFL.com, I think it is, have a with champion data, have a player rating system. He's number 13 in the competition at the moment out of every single player, and he's number 2 for midfielder forward behind Robbie Gray. And I would argue Robbie Gray's not a midfield forward anyway. He's a pure midfielder.
I'd argue Zorko's having a much better season.
Yeah, absolutely. He's number 8 in the competition for inside 50s, number 8 for ranking points, and he's... He's had 19-plus disposals in every game and kicked a goal in all but three games, I think, this year.
As opposed to Talia, I really like this from you, Ben, because you've been keeping an eye on Zorko all year. You did a feature on him in the preseason. I remember that. You liked him from that moment. And it's great that you're watching non-traditional Victorian teams, unlike the AFL Women's League, which has just been promoted yesterday, and actually watching them closely and looking at their best players. Zorko is their best. And I think he'd be close to a lock rather than a smoky. He's having a terrific year.
Well, let's go on to the Brisbane West Coast game for the weekend, because Dane Zorko will be involved in that game, as will Tom Rockliffe. He's had a ripping last couple of weeks, 48 and 34 touches, 9 tackles each in those games. But Tommy, it's been a rough road for the Brisbane Lions, particularly in the last couple of weeks. They were super disappointing against the Dockers last weekend. We talked about how, besides the Collingwood game, they'd been pretty good at home leading up to that game. But another big thumping at the hands of a side that had only won one game for the year. Justin Lepage has to come under some scrutiny.
Well, he already has come under significant scrutiny. I wonder if he's actually at a Victorian club, if he would have come under more. But he bit back at the press conference last week, which I thought was at the very least interesting viewing, at the most probably a little bit too far. He's going to be asked questions every week if they continue to put up that sort of performance. That's my take on it anyway. We're probably a little bit biased because we are journalists. But I will say this. Brisbane have a good enough list to compete. It's not hard to compete at the very least. And they've showed that this year. They can compete in certain games. But with Rockliffe back and with Zorko at his best, they're okay. But Daniel Rich needs to lift. These sort of players need to go more. They can't kick enough goals as well. That's a real problem for them. West Coast a real test, even though it's at home at the Gabba. They have been better at the Gabba though, because they did play quite well against Hawthorn there. They just need to produce that again and hopefully get the 4 points.
Push North Melbourne, beat Gold Coast there. But what Jonathan Brown made some interesting comments on the couch on Monday night about Brisbane's tough draw. And it's sort of been mentioned in bits and pieces, I think. Drew, how do you see Brisbane's draw so far this season?
Yeah, when he first brought that up on the couch, I probably tended to agree with him to a certain extent. So I ran some numbers.
Yes.
So
good prep.
It is quite primitive. So I've rated every team's fixture according to who it's against and where it is. So the easiest game is a bottom 10 club at home.
Yep.
So that's got the lowest points rating. And obviously the hardest game is a top 8 team away. Now, this isn't taking into account Melbourne clubs. This is purely away or home.
Interstate.
It doesn't take. So if Carlton play St Kilda away, it rates as an away game against a bottom 10, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So Brisbane rate 33. That's their score. So that includes 3 5s. So 3 times they've played away against top 8 teams. Yeah. So a 33 is pretty high. Who do you guys think would have had the hardest draw?
Adelaide?
Ben?
Yeah, I would have said the Crows as well.
Crows rate of 36.
Yep.
Frio rate of 36. The hardest draw, according to my primitive system,
I love the suspense,
is Hawthorn, who rate of 38. Hawks? So the Hawks have played away against the top 8 team 4 times.
Yeah, okay.
Now, the easiest draw is Gold Coast with 26. Blues have 27 and Melbourne 27. So
damning for Gold Coast, isn't it?
Yeah. So Brisbane's draw rates about the fourth or fifth hardest in the league.
What I like about this is they rate the draws at the start of the year. Who's got the easiest draw, who's got the hardest draw. But that's based on last year's form. You've rated this mid-season based on this year, and I really like that's an up-to-date form guide.
Yeah, essentially. So, you know, there's teams that have particularly a GWS, you know, away in previous years has been a lock for a win, and now it's one of the hardest games in footy.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how they go against the West Coast Eagles, who themselves have come under some scrutiny as well this week, Drew, and it's not going to be easy for them with Nick Natanui out for 6 to 8 weeks with an Achilles injury, something that he probably carried a little bit last year and he's carried certainly this year, and the Eagles decided to have some put him in for surgery, and the surgery went well, for according to Adam Simpson yesterday. How do the Eagles play the ruck duel here? What are you expecting at the selection table?
Well, Scott Lysett's had a really good season. So, I mean, you're clearly losing something with Natanui out of the team, but at least he can come in form. I mean, he had his worst game of the season probably on the weekend, but he'll be able to take over that number one ruck role and he'll be fine. I think they'll go Fraser McInnes.
Really?
Yeah, because, I mean, Scott Lysett's going to be rucking 88% of the game. McInnes can just come in and give him a chop out at times, but he's a much better forward and can also play back. If Lysett and Natanui are injured, then yeah, John Giles would take the number one ruck role, but I just don't think he has enough to offer around the ground for what the role is. There has been talk of Jeremy McGovern doing it, but I think
I hope that doesn't happen.
He's too important back.
Agree, yeah.
And with McKenzie back in, so the last two games West Coast have played, they've either not had McGovern or McKenzie. they want McGovern to obviously play that loose intercept role, and having McKenzie in the team means that he can do that. So I wouldn't have thought they'll change that around.
Tell me your thoughts on Cripps and Lacroix. We often group them together, but they've been underwhelming this year largely, apart from a couple of flat track occasions at Subiaco. Where are they at, and what do West Coast need from them in the back half of the season in order to contend for a grand final appearance and potentially a premiership?
Oh, and they need a lot more. Lacroix had a down year, but I think he's probably always been better at home, and that's probably reflective of West Coast. Maybe he's more reliant on the midfield dominating than we realise. Cripps, I think, is still rated high in the AFL, quite high for tackles inside 50. And I think
he was number one last year. Yeah.
So I think that's the baseline that they judge his form. He's not kicking as many goals, which is a shame. Yeah, he's not having as good a year. But I think I was talking about with Julian De Stoop yesterday, the only player who's improved is Scott Lycett. And the only player that's probably breaking even on last year is Brad Shepherd. And other than that, everyone else, Josh Kennedy's been pretty good. Everyone else is pretty much down.
Before we get into our tips, Sydney and Melbourne take on each other at the SCG, Tommy. The D's, great win over the Pies. As bad as the Pies were, the D's did the job in the end with two brilliant quarters in the second and fourth. They take on the Swans, and it's the first game that Melbourne has played at the SCG in over 4 years, and they haven't won in almost a decade as well. So a big opportunity here for the D's.
Well, no Melbourne player that will play on the weekend has ever won at the SCG playing for Melbourne. So it's uncharted territory for even Nathan Jones, who's played over 200 games for the D's. So it's going to be interesting. They were good against Collingwood, although you have to take it with a touch of grain of salt because the Pies are playing pretty ordinary football at the moment. Like, they're coming along nicely, the D's, and I'm pretty happy the way they're going. You wrote a very good piece on foxfooty.com.au about Christian Petrarca.
Off the track. Very exciting.
He's got a basketball NBA-type mentality, doesn't he? He's all about the trick shots, but he actually does the hard work as well, and I really like the way he's going. This is going to be an interesting game because Sydney, they're coming off a loss. They're playing at home. They'd be expected to win, but the D's have the potential to just cause a little upset, and it's not completely beyond the realms of possibility that they could push the Swans here.
I was just going to say, is there any sport that a player plays before footy that we mention more than basketball? If anyone had a shoot around, if anyone had a shoot around at the local indoor basketball centre before they went down to their footy club, we talk about it.
I'm finding, like, when we did the draft coverage last year leading up to this year's draft, there were half a dozen players coming from basketball backgrounds. There's a few this year in this year's draft that are coming from basketball backgrounds.
Well, spatial awareness is so important. I mean, it's been written about extensively how important the basketball skills are and how transferable they are to football, but it's no secret that it's becoming more and more prominent as the years go on.
We talked about Nick Natanui beforehand and what the Eagles might do in the rucks. What are Sydney, do you think, going to do in the rucks with Kurt Tippett out for 6 weeks? I think if Buddy went down, that's the biggest loss, but I reckon Kurt's a pretty close second at the moment. He misses the next month and a half with a hamstring injury, and the Swans take on Max Gawn, who's coming off a best-on-ground performance against the Pies on the weekend.
I was a little surprised at how little that Sinclair has played in the ruck this year to this point. I thought they might have split it a little more 50-50, but Kurt's been in such good form that perhaps they were happy to have Sinclair players roll up forward, which he's done pretty well. He'll be the number one ruckman. The thing about the three guys they've got to come in is that they're all ruckmen. So Naismith, Nankervis and Derek. So
Big Tom.
They're all backup ruckmen. They're not forward rucks. I think Nankervis has been okay up forward. Naismith we haven't seen a lot of. He's had a lot of injury problems, but they, during my time in Sydney, always talked about him as someone they had a lot of high hopes for. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Naismith because I think they just want to give him a crack and he's actually fit. But Nankervis has played the role a couple of times, but I think you'll find it might be more of a 60-40 sort of split in the ruck just simply because Sinclair is capable up forward.
I tell you what John Longmire won't do, and that's play three ruckmen in the hope of beating one ruckman like Nathan Buckley did, because that just did not work at all, did it? And it just proves that numbers don't necessarily win you a ruck contest. You need to actually have good players doing that for you.
Well, a ruck is a one-on-one contest. So
yeah,
you can't
at any given time, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a bit strange.
Well, I don't think we'll see Tom Derricks this weekend. I think Julian De Stoop said during the week that he's more likely to be appearing on the catwalk on Sunday afternoon than actually out on the SCG. Let's move into our tips for this weekend. Tommy, let's start with you. North taking on Hawthorn at Etihad on Friday night.
For the reasons we suggested earlier, I'm going with North Melbourne back against the wall. I like them. Eagles will defeat the Lions at the Gabba. I'm going for Fred Freo over Port at Subiaco. I don't mind Freo at the moment. They're playing good footy. Lockie Weller's a good young player, and I think they'll go three on the trot.
That'd be a huge loss for Port Adelaide if they went down as well.
Yeah, I think they're just about due for another huge loss, aren't they? They get ahead of themselves, or they don't get ahead of themselves. We start talking about them as the next team in, and they lose, and I think they're about due for another one of them. I think Geelong are going to beat the Dogs, but that's the hardest game of the week to tip for me. Sydney will beat Melbourne at the SCG. If it was at the MCG, I'd probably change my tip. And GWS will beat Essendon in Zach Merritt's 50th game. Looking forward to watching your thing on Sunday, Drew, with Zach.
Yeah, tough round to tip. I think Hawthorn, but I'm not certain about that.
We've both got to stop sitting on the fence. Just go out and say it.
Well, I'm just being honest.
So yeah, okay. Yeah.
I think Hawthorn are in great form. North Melbourne have got injuries. It might be 60 to 50 or something. I don't know.
They've also got a 60% Todd Goldstein at the moment. I think he's a player that... I think Julian De Stoop's writing a column for this on Friday about the players who need the buy. Goldie's probably one of those players at the moment.
Yeah, it's a good shout. West Coast, but not with any confidence because we're just not playing good footy. And it's hard. I'd hate tipping teams who aren't playing well, but you can't tip Brisbane.
Can I ask you a question? If Brisbane get done by 100 points and you're in the press conference with Justin Lepich after the game, do you ask him about his future or not?
You probably word it a bit better than maybe.
Yeah, I think you do word it differently.
Yeah,
and you probably ask a few questions beforehand to soften it up.
Yeah,
Dorothy
it was.
Dixes.
How is Dane Zorko going? He's playing all right, isn't he?
I think you say something along the lines of, "How much longer can this go on?"
Yep, well said. That's an experienced journo.
Yeah, good work, Deej.
Port Adelaide have to win this game.
They do.
Like West Coast are giving teams below an opportunity to press for finals. When we thought the eight was set, Port Adelaide have to win this game. So I'm going to tip them. Geelong, Sydney, GWS.
Very nice work, Deej.
The amount of times teams have to win games and lose is unbelievable. So I'm not sure your reasoning is rock solid, but you're entitled to your opinion as always, Drew.
And you can catch Drew's work on AFL Tonight on Sunday with his big feature on Zach Merritt. And of course, you can check out Tommy's work on foxfooty.com.au. We're going to be without you for a couple of weeks. Enjoy your sojourn up to Europe.
Thank you. Enjoying my American adventures, actually.
You're starting in Europe, then going to America.
Yep, I'll be back in July and looking forward to watching more footy when I get back.
Well, excellent. Well, I'm sure you can give some advice to the Golden State Warriors and the Cavs while you're over there. Hopefully catch the last game in maybe a Game 7 series. That's all we have time for on the Thursday Match Committee. We'll be back next week for the Monday review. As always, make sure you follow us on Twitter @FoxFootyLive and keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.